changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaska Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskans.
Welcome to Chinook. I'm Deborah Niedermeyer. Catherine Peter grew up in Fort Yukon. In 1937, she married and left her home to live by traditional subsistence hunting and fishing in the Chandalar country around Arctic Village. The continual travel, the starchless diet, and the skills of survival in remote areas were all unfamiliar to her. Peter has written a book about her first 10 years in the Chandalar country. Not only is it the story of a young bride and mother learning to cope with traditional Athabaskan living, it is the longest narrative ever written in Peter's native language, Gwich'in.
Are there people who will be able to read it in Gwich'in?
Yes, there's some.
But for the rest of us who can't read it, there's an English translation as well in the book.
Yes. That's one of the reasons why I translated it. It's kind of a free translation. Like, if I did it word by word, the English reader has to piece it together.
It seems like the biggest thing in the book is that you got married and then you went out hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And you've never really been hunting. You mostly lived in Fort Yukon before you were married, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was new about going out hunting?
It's different from going up in Fort Yukon to remote area. And it's just different from how I grew up. Like at Fort Yukon, you could just move around in the summer, move around with motorboats and stuff. But up there, at that time, when I first went up there, there's no boats. They only travel with dogs with packs on them. And I never saw that before. And it's just very difficult for me at first.
This is
because I don't know how to put the packs on the dogs and stuff.
This was traveling up around Arctic Village.
Right? Uh-huh.
And you said something in your book about the food was different in the remote areas?
It's not that different, but it was hard. It was hard for Arctic Village people to have all the foods that we eat from the store. It would be bad if I run out of sugar and flour, rice, which is the main stuff that people eat, you know. But all of a sudden, there'll be only dry meat and boiled meat, and it's just nothing but meat and fish. And most of the time, there's no tea, no sugar, no flour, no rice and whatnot. And it's just different. You know, it's not like that now, but it was really isolated at that time.
You said something in your book about never having tan skins before?
Well, I've seen it done when I was growing up. My stepmother, she tan skin a lot. And I've seen it done, but I don't like to look at skin. I just didn't care to work on skin. And when I went up there, my mother-in-law was still living. And one day she said, she came to visit me and she said, grandchild, sometimes it's hard time, hard for us to buy things all the time, she said. And I said, I just listened to her. And she said, we don't have money enough to buy things all the time. And you could do a lot of things with your hands. And once you start working on skin, then when once you get to know how, then it'll be easy. But it's just the learning time that's difficult and hard. She told me, and I don't like to look at the skin. It seems like I'm going to fall down when I see the skin. It's that bad to look at it, I said. And she said, well, once you know how to do it, then you'll be happier. And if you see the finished product that you did and start using it, that's when the enjoyment comes in, she said. And she said, why don't you bring three terrible skins in, and I'll show you how. And which I did very reluctantly. I brought them in, and we were in a tent, living in a tent, but it wasn't cold, it was springtime. So one day she came over and she saw the skins piled right there in the corner. And she said, you haven't done anything on that skin yet. And so she sharpened a knife and she gave it to me and she said, start cutting the hair off. And amazingly, I did well. I cut the hair off and she said, well, you did a good job. Next, you have to, with a bone scraper, you have to scrape the inside of it and make it real clean and then turn it around and do the other side. And that's all there is to it, she said. But first you have to put it in water and soak it, and it'll be easier for you to scrape the black part off. So I think I did. I forgot if I did it or not. But she showed me how. But the first time I worked on moose hide, I did it all by myself. And I don't know why I did it. I hung it up and it was full of holes. And I cried.
That was your first moose skin?
Yeah.
You put the holes in it. But now you tan all the time, right?
Right now I could just close my eyes and do it.
There was a time, I guess it says here in March of 1942, that you had to go back up fishing, and you had to go with three children, all by yourself, by dogs, back up to around Arctic Village.
No, Arctic Village. To Porcupine. Some village they call, I forgot what they call it now. Yeah, thick they call it. It's maybe 100 miles or even less from Chalkeetic. And up to Porcupine, it's on the Porcupine. David Francis. Come down, and we were going to spring camp with them. So I took my three kids and put them in a toboggan and hitched the dogs and went behind him. But his dogs were faster than my dog, so he always get away from me. And then he waits until I catch up with him. And at one time he did that, and I never saw Chalkeetic before, and we were going up that way, so he left me, and it was blowing hard, and sometimes the trail don't show, and I was on a slough or a lake or whatever, I don't know what it is, but I was there, and pretty soon I came to a trail that split, so I don't know which one to take. And I stopped the dogs and looked at the trail. And I never read trail marks before, but I heard about it. So I went and looked at it, And this left one looks like it's fresh dog tags on it. But the other one was kind of old like. So I took the left trail that looks newer. And I was going through that long blue that I've been. Finally, I came to our tent. And I thought to myself, oh, I must have missed the right one because this must be the trapline tent or something. And it was getting pretty close to dark. It was springtime when the days are long, but it was getting dark, so I thought, I'm not going to go ahead. I don't know how long this trail, I don't know where Chalkeetic is. So I think I better camp here. So I unhitched the dogs and built fire in the tent, and there was no, the last little pieces of wood there, I started the fire with it, and then I told the oldest one, she was about six or seven, I told her that take care of your sister and brother while I go out and get wood because it's going to get dark. I didn't have a snowshoe or anything, so just crawl around in that snow, the knee-high, deep snow, and crawl around to get some wood. And finally, I did that and brought some wood in and built fire and fed the pigs. And they went to sleep because they were tired. Just then I heard the dog was barking, so I looked outside and someone was coming up the way that I came. And he came in and he said, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm just following David Francis, but I don't know where Chalkeetic is. So I thought I'll just camp here because I'm tired and the kids are tired. And he said, Chalkeetic is just about 15 minutes from here. Why don't you come with me? You could go up there, he said. No, I said, no. The kids are too tired. I think I'll just stay overnight. Then he left me some groceries, and this is for the kids, he said, and he left. So, about another 30 minutes, dog bark again, and David Francis come back to get me. And I wish I had stayed. I thought to myself, I wish I'd stayed overnight because I hate to wake up the kids and put them in a toboggan. But he insists that we go because the next day we have to go up to Gastic.
So you left.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't dress the kids. I just put them in a toboggan and that's it.
Did you get a Chalkeetic that night?
Yeah.
Was that pretty scary, being lost?
Well, I felt bad, but then I was young, I don't care.
Catherine Peter's autobiography, Living in the Sandalah Country, will be available around Christmas time from the Alaska Native Language Center on the University of Alaska Fairbanks campus. For Chinook, I'm Deborah Niedermeyer. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.